What's good, sneaker history fam? Nick Engvall here. Hey, I know most of you probably already know that I started a show called Cars and Kicks with my friend Jacques Slade and Eric Valdez. We talk a lot about sneakers and cars, and we try to connect the through lines and the storylines between those two worlds that we're all kind of passionate about. But on a recent episode, we had a legendary Nike designer on, Aaron Cooper. If you're listening to sneaker history, you probably already know who he is, what he's done. He has had an amazing run in the footwear industry and beyond the footwear industry. And we had him on the show recently. So today's episode is just kind of a special episode to showcase that interview, show you what the Cars and Kicks podcast is like. There's a lot of sneaker content on this one. There's a really good balance of sneaker content and car content throughout most of the episodes. But this conversation with Aaron is really inspiring, and I just wanted to share it with our listeners of sneaker history. So thanks for supporting us, and hope you enjoy this one.
I feel like a movie guy in a land where podcasts are plenty. What up, everybody? Welcome to the Cars and Kicks podcast. And today, I don't even know how to explain it, but we have a guest that is just one of my favorite peoples in the world. Just super nice, super kind, but one of the most talented people that I probably have a relationship with. And it's going to be a really, really great, great show. Now, as you guys know, I am the sneaker guy on this show. I'm learning about cars, but I definitely don't know them as well as my co-host. I'm impressed by a redone Infiniti, and they laugh at me when I talk about it. But you know what? That's part of me learning. That's part of me learning about cars in this process. But again, my co-hosts, who are really the most important people on this show, Eric and Nick, you guys go ahead and introduce yourselves, and let's get this show started because this is going to be a good one.
Jacques hype today. Hey, listen, there's no judgment on the Infiniti side of things. Like, if you are, it doesn't matter what it is, if you're into cars and you have the bug now to like modify it or restore it, respect. So it doesn't matter what it is. So anyway, my name is Eric Valdez. For those of y'all that are just tuning in, I am more of the car guy on the Cars and Kicks side of thing. I do love me some kicks, but as those of you who do listen regularly have heard, my collection doesn't even come close to rivaling that of Jacques or Nick's or our guest today, which I'm going to let Nick introduce Coop here. He's on the screen. For the sneakerheads out there, you're already excited. I know you are, but I'm excited. I've never met today's guest in person, but he is also a bit of a gearhead based on what I've seen on social media. Has designed some of the most incredible sneakers out there. But Nick, I'm going to let you introduce yourself and then take us into our guest for the day.
Yeah, I kind of bounce back and forth between these two worlds of cars and kicks, but more importantly, I'm just here to keep Jacques and Eric on track and make sure we don't go too far off the rails with any of these shows. But
very true.
I'm gonna actually pass on this introduction because I will just fanboy too much, and I know Jacques has a more personal relationship with Mr. Aaron Cooper, and I think again, this is like, as somebody who's a sneakerhead from, 8-10 years old, like I just am dumbfounded that I get to have conversations with someone who's done so much and created so much of the energy and given so much of his energy to this thing that I love. But Jacques, I'll let you do the final intro.
Okay. So, in life, they often tell you, like, never meet like your idols, because you just never know what kind of people they are. And that sentiment couldn't be further from the truth when it comes to Coop. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Aaron Cooper, former Nike designer. Now he's an independent designer doing all sorts of things from sneakers to furniture. He does it all. But most of us know him from his time at Nike. He's worked with pretty much every athlete that you can think of, and he's designed pretty much every sneaker that you probably think is really, really cool. But more important than that, he's just a really genuinely good person. He has an amazing heart. He's very thoughtful, very intentional. And I don't know if that's just the designer in him or that's just the way God made him human, but he is a guy that I definitely appreciate. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for who I call Coop, but Aaron Cooper.
Yeah, virtual applause from the audience.
Yeah, the show's great. Keep going. The show's great so far.
Okay, so Coop, let's get into it. I guess let's kind of just start, because I don't want to start with the highlight stuff of like, oh, you did this and you did this and you did this. Let's start early on. Like, what was your journey? How did you get to the world renowned designer? What was the journey to that place?
Yeah, let's go way back, because you brought it up. I do believe it's in my genetics. My father was a preacher. So I was a preacher's kid. Mm-hmm. Funny enough, because Nick, you asked if I grew up in Seattle area. Anybody that knows the area up there, I grew up on Mercer Island,
which is
mm-hmm. still one of the wealthiest communities in our country. And I like to joke that I was one of the poorest kids in the richest communities in the country, being a preacher's kid. I was the one that had the duct tape on the soccer shoes, because we couldn't
nice.
Afford a new pair. I only got one pair of shoes a year. That's actually why I still love doing the inexpensive footwear briefs, because as a kid I still wanted to be a cool kid and rock some cool kicks and perform at the same level as my friends that definitely had more money than I did. So I want to give what I can to that level of product, just like I do for a statement level product. But yeah, so my father was a preacher. My mom was a social activist. Grew up in a very open home, before it was even really talked about. That's just how I grew up. So, so nature was strong, and my nurture, kind of kept the right things on and maybe, turned a few things off that maybe because they're, the little switches, right? Those little genetic switches. Mm-hmm. So I just was fortunate, in that way. Create a family as well. The one switch that didn't get turned on was the academics. Both my mom and my father and my brother are all tested genius. They didn't even bother testing me. I was the kid with the doodles on the side of the papers and the test. I'd fill in the bubble boxes, with little pictures and things. but I did enough to get by, and then I flourished in my art classes. And luckily for all the parents out there, I think more people know that you can make you don't have to starve, but to be an artist, you can be a designer, an artful designer and make a living doing things that, maybe 40 years ago, people didn't really think was, a right path for their child. But nowadays, like, creativity is such a strong, you guys, we're on this right now because we're all creators, right? Just visual creators on Instagram, whatever they may be. Just I would say to like creators, so if you have a kid that's a creator, spray the gasoline, don't dump it all because you can put the fire out, but keep a nice little constant spray going of fuel so your kid can grow up and be the creative person that, quite honestly, like every kid is, right? Until somebody tells the kid,
until somebody robs them of it.
Yep. Yeah, the kids that are drawing that kind of looks like a flower, but it doesn't, and then somebody comes along and says, that's a weird looking flower, and then they get all bummed out because it doesn't. It's like, just let people be. Let them. I think that's the best thing we can do for each other.
So I love that story. Just the kind of, growing up in a neighborhood where, I guess, socioeconomically you don't necessarily fit in, but that seems to have inspired whatever creative juices in there from an early age, just to not to fit in, but to kind of be, a part of something that you couldn't just buy your way into, so to speak. And having a huge part of everything is having sounds like a very supportive system from your parents, and being those types of parents that support, that put you outside in nature and, allow you to kind of be who you're going to be. I've got a 6-year-old now, and you can talk about it this all day long, but until you're in that situation where you're trying to like nurture and this little human, it's, you don't really quite get it, but everything you're saying now is like super resonating, and that's awesome, man.
You know what's funny? It just made me realize cars and kicks. So we had not one, but two wood paneled Pinto station wagons.
Yes.
My dad's was automatic, but my mom demanded to have shift because she wanted. She had a Porsche growing up, and she dated a race car driver, and so she wanted to have that manual. But it was funny that she wanted to have the driving experience while driving a wood panel Pinto station wagon. Like, God bless
her. Hey, that bug, yeah. Once you get that bug, it doesn't leave you, man. Please tell me one of them was like, I don't remember what the proper term was, but like the guacamole green color with the wood paneling. Was one of them green with the wood paneling, one of the Pintos? No,
one was blue and the other one was yellow.
God, hey, it still works.
So maybe cars were also kind of in my genetics a little bit.
And that's awesome.
How
man.
Did you how did you end up at Nike?
Yeah, so keep putting me back on track, Jock, because you asked me a question, I'd be like started answering, then I'm like hard right or hard left.
No, that's where you find
that's how our show works.
Meat that's and everything. Cool. That's how it goes. Yeah. And that's the beauty of it all, is you end up finding out the details.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
So growing up creative, I will add for others that are out there, and I am an emotional person, so if I get choked up for some reason, it just happened to me this morning, and that's why, if anybody hasn't seen it, just go to Jacques, your latest post, water came out of my face too.
Yep.
And it just happened to me this morning, talking with someone. I do a lot of mentoring. I will get back to your question. I do a lot of mentoring, and you guys, do you know Leica? Leica Studios.
Camera?
No, Leica. So they do all the stop motion, like Paranorman and
all
the
other. Oh, yes.
So that started as Will Vinton Studios. So I don't know if you remember like the California Raisins that they would sing.
Yeah.
So that started as from Will Vinton. Wow. There was a little bit of Phil Knight, it was a very, it went to court. Like it was kind of a gnarly takeover almost. And now it's Leica, but the daughter of Will Vinton I met with, she just graduated from college. She wants to get into footwear. If anybody's listening, this girl is ridiculously talented. And so I met with her and we were just talking, my father passed away. Her father, we were just talking about all that. And I just got like emotionally like kind of taken over. Just like Jock, you said, like it just, you can't predict it. As much as my brother wants to call me on every day of the year that one of our parents passed to like, hey, are you doing okay? I'm like, yeah, why? I'm like, oh, well, today is when, you know, like, oh, I didn't even. But if you called me like 3 weeks ago when I was, you know, all of a sudden crying, walking down the street, that, you know, but so I wanted to say that growing up, I did have about 4 years. My mom was bipolar and it came out when I was about eight. And she went into mental hospitals. It was a pretty gnarly, like 8 to 12. Luckily, I had a friend. My best friend was 4 years older than me. He's the one that got me into BMX. That was my big sport, BMX racing. But she was also like, maybe it's also part of, maybe it's a blessing too. And I've told her, well, she passed away, but I did tell her because she always felt bad that I didn't have a mom. I told her like I'm happy with my life today, so I wouldn't have changed anything. And it's funny that when she would go and she's these manic episodes that were pretty gnarly, I would just go into my bedroom, which by the way, every single inch of my bedroom was plastered with posters, cars, magazine cutouts, everything. Like you can tell what color the paint was. It was just all posters and magazine cutouts.
Oh, that's it.
But I would go into my room, shut the door, crank Led Zeppelin and just start drawing. And I would go into my place. That was my happy place.
Wow.
So I did that growing up. And like I said, in high school, academics and I didn't get along very well. So I would always, you know, go into my art classes. I went to the Art Center College of Design after high school. And a counselor from that school came in my freshman year, came into art, into a art class. And I didn't love academics. And so I would skip classes sometimes. I also want like listeners and everybody to know, like, I didn't like, some people were like, oh, you must've led like the perfect life. No, like not awesome life, very bumpy, but I had this North Star, either I was conscious or subconscious about it. And as soon as this counselor, like, just happened to come to our school, present Art Center, everyone in the class and all of my friends had had those classes that were, they heard her as well. They're like, who the heck would want to go to that school? Like, that would be insane. I'm like, me, like tomorrow, because I don't get along with you all. I'm kidding. It was high school was a little, I just was like, I just had this path. I don't know. And certainly had some hurdles and pitfalls and barriers and obstacles to get around, but I finally made it. And I knew I wanted to go to Art Center because I felt like that was a place that I could, you know, pour my creativity in and I would learn more and I would find a place in the world. And, funny enough, during that, I knew I wanted to do two internships. So I've always been a kind of a goal driven future vision person. So, my freshman year, I was going to graduate from Art Center, which you have to get accepted to. So right. There's a whole process. And while at Art Center, I wanted to do two internships, one at a consultancy, product consultancy, and one at a company or a corporation to figure out what life, you know, would look like. And then I also had a goal of getting a job offer before I graduated because I didn't want to go through the whole process of that. Mm-hmm. And plus internships are it's a 4-month interview, you know, the best thing you could do. So all those kids out there, you know, if you go into an internship, you know, turn the lights on and turn the lights off. You know, if you want to have some, you know, fun outside of that, you know, that's what Saturdays and Sundays are for. But I would argue, you know, even then, like, bust your ass, like, do your, you know, do everything you can to show, I say do everything you can so that it hurts, like, within like a month before you leave, they're like, it's going to hurt them that you're, when you leave, you know, like you're that workload that you're providing. So anyway, my school told me, and I actually went to a Nike store here in Portland. And I saw design drawings on, it was when Nike stores had like little vignettes of sports. Like you'd walk into the tennis room and you'd hear like the tennis balls, like, basketball, you hear the squeaking of the ACG room had a saltwater fish tank and they had, Deschutes sandals sitting in there with all the fish swimming around them. And then they had design sketches on the side. I'm like, and I was in school at the time. And I'm like, well, I guess somebody does have to design the shoes. I mean, this is a long time ago, guys. Like, so, before sneakers were even really a thing. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. So I went up to the cash register and I'm like, hey, where is Nike? You have like, who did these? What? They're like, oh, I don't know, but here's a brochure. And they handed me a brochure, which I still have. And so I just cold called, the front desk of, I didn't know what it looked like. I had no idea. Found my path into the head of design, footwear design, and footwear design back then was like 22 people. And my school said, don't bother with Nike. They don't do internships. And back, you know, if you ask my parents how to get me to do something when I was growing up, tell me what not to do.
Yep.
So that was like,
relate.
You know, sure yeah, exactly. So yeah, so long story to say that, I ended up being Nike's first intern and they, offered me a job before I graduated, before I left the internship. And I did, that was the first internship was at IDEO, which is probably the world's best consultancy. I did the office that I interned at was down in Palo Alto. So as soon as I got that offer from Nike, I called my manager from IDEO and I said, you know, not to be presumptuous, but I, you know, just let him know they just got an offer, but I loved the internship there. And if upon graduation, he thought there might be an offer for that job, you know, a job down there just to let me know so I can think about it, whatever. He called me back in like 30 minutes and said, we'll match your offer. So I had to decide between like, funny enough, somebody was doing this when I was there, decide between designing toothbrushes or designing shoes. Because at a product consultancy, you can be doing toothbrushes,
sure,
office furniture, computers, sporting equipment, you name it, whatever. And somebody I was working with, Oral-B was a client, and they loved this one designer. He didn't really love doing toothbrushes, but sorry, you're getting paid to draw toothbrushes. So I figured, I could get paid to draw footwear, design shoes for athletes to help them achieve their goals and their dreams. And that's the way I looked at it. I am a product designer, industrial designer. So I'm approaching it from that side, never from like the fashion. Good design is form and function. They symbiotic relationship. So
right.
Form follows function. I can keep going, guys.
I love stories like this where you start to really find out, you know, first of all, I love the fact that you keep going to, you know, if there's kids listening out there, for any kids listening out there, you know, Nick, Jacques, and I, that's part of the reason we started this was not just to talk about cars and kicks, two things that we love, but also, you know, as creatives and very emotional people, I think a big part of why we create is to influence others. And not because we want to be big, popular superstars. It's because when you can reach out and speak to the kid that, you know, that doesn't quite fit in anywhere, or that is being bullied, or that hasn't found their way, so to speak, yet. When you can reach, if it's one person or a million people, if you can affect someone's life that way, that to me is what it's all about. And we've all talked about that off camera and everything. And so the fact that you keep reiterating that is huge, and it speaks to your character, which we already knew much, you know, a lot about you thanks to Jacques, and he's sung your praises and everything. So none of this is really surprising, but it is inspiring. And also just to hear kind of your path, you know, going back to something is traumatic, I guess, for lack of a better term, is watching your mom go through her phases and finding solace in, you know, throwing on Led Zeppelin in a room full of just whatever made you happy and creating. Like, it could have gone a whole other direction, man. Like, when people go through stuff like that, it can take on. And there's no right or wrong thing. You can't judge a person for how they handle traumatic situations. But the fact that you consciously or subconsciously chose that path, man, that's really, yeah, really cool. And where it's led you is just amazing.
Well, thank you. And I still have dark days. We all have dark days, right?
We do.
Some of us are blessed to have less dark days or more light in our dark days than others. But unfortunately, you know, my mom did try to commit suicide a few times. I've had suicide in my life before I even had kids, and my kids have had friends that have committed suicide. And so I try to be as empathetic as possible. And it's so crazy. There's a statistic of the people that tried and didn't succeed. Mm. Luckily, some astronomical, like 90%+ of them say that the split second that they made the decision, they regretted it.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily they were, you know, they lived a, you know, another day. And so like, for me, we all have dark days, and you just have to you have to know your light source and be able to find it or use it or get to it. And there's some times where you get so dark, you're not even motivated to find it or use it or get to it. So you need to have people in your life that you've opened up to and before that, so they know these signals. They're like, hey, I don't know why, but are you okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's for everybody out there, young or old, doesn't matter. You gotta monitor the people in your life, and you gotta, you know, present signal. Like, you just have to be open. And that's why I could get choked up again. Your post just like hit me to the core the other day, Jacques.
Yeah. Grief is. Yeah.
And we've back to the cars and kicks. Like, that is why I do what I do. I don't draw. I don't do footwear. I was just going to grab. I have shoes all over.
You should.
No, I know. But it's some of them, you're not supposed to see. But this one I can. This is that running shoe this is an earlier sample, but it's already out there, so I can do that. But I'm not designing this so that, like, it gets collected and bought and collected and resold and whatever. I mean, it does great, but I'm doing this so that somebody is inspired to put it on and go for a walk or run. They just feel better about themselves when they have this on. And that's footwear. That's what kicks do, sneakers. And then same with cars. Like, one of my happy places is getting in my Firebird. And I've yet to turn the radio on, because the engine is just
listen. All you got to listen to is the V8, man.
Yeah.
Did my kids love it? I don't know. I posted something on my daughter. She goes to school in Hawaii and she's like, oh, I miss going for rides with you. And I don't know. There's not a whole lot much better than that.
Yeah.
For me. I 100% agree with that.
Was there a moment for you, Coop, that thought process kind of took hold of your direction? You know, because I imagine like you didn't always have that, looking at toothbrushes on one hand and sneakers on the other. You weren't necessarily probably thinking about as deeply as you think about it now, but obviously people feel it. And like, this is where, you know, me being able to come up there and spend time with you and the group last summer, Jacques, the previous, you know, like that is like what we all love these things for. But I think like we, as you know, the algorithms push it out there and everything just becomes so consumer driven. And like, you know, you want to see that success, but like, it's irrelevant in a lot of ways. Right. Cause it's like, you're doing it because it matters to that one athlete. Right. And like,
I've always said, you got to stay focused on the people. The moment you focus on the profit, the people will walk away. If you stay focused on the people, the profits will come. And that's how Nike was when I was an intern there. I was on a call, a meeting this morning with some 40-year-plus veterans from Nike. We're working on a project, and they were telling me about somebody else, and I'm like, about their athletic background before they got to Nike, and I'm like, there we go, there it is again. Where I'm like, I worked for years with people, and found out they were an Olympic level.
Wow. Athlete.
Like, that's what we did. Like, that was the mission. You could look at, you walked around the campus, anybody that you saw, you could look, you saw that little blink, you know, a little twinkle in their eye, and are like, I know what you're up to today. And it's, you're up to like making the world better with sports and athletics, and whether you do footwear, apparel, or what part of that job you're in, everybody was same mission. It was kind of like that story with JFK and the janitor, you know, at NASA. You know, everybody felt like that was the mission. We're going to the moon. And that's what it was at Nike. Like, and Phil Knight walked around like a father figure. You felt like you were part of a family. It was blood. I would tell people that's part of the problem today, not just at Nike, but I would say the world. We're made up. We're human beings, right? Blood, sweat, and tears, hugs, laughter, and love. It's got to be a balance. We have to have that. Like, if it comes, if it's out of balance, things are out of whack, which I think they are.
In a lot of ways.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it brings up an interesting thought. We had last season, we had Brett Goliff on the show, which was one of my favorite interviews ever. And he also, you know, gave so much credit to you inspiring his path and his journey. And one of the quotes that he mentioned that really resonated was "millimeters matter." And I believe that came from you. And it not only matters in product design itself, but to what you're saying right now is in the people behind the product, like the CEO to the janitor, to the, you know, the person walking down, that like every single millimeter, quote unquote, is part of the greater plan and the greater, you know, in the grand scheme of things. And I feel like all too often, especially nowadays, people look at the profit aspect of it. And people are dispensable, and you know, design comes before function because it's going to be more hype and it's going to sell quicker or whatever. And I feel like, you know, somewhere along the way, we as society, as human beings, have somehow lost our way and kind of succumbed to this new world that we've lived in with, you know, that's algorithm based. That's got, you don't rely on focus groups back in the day like you did with certain people who are expressing actual interest. You're trying to set the bar every single day and trying to go viral every single day and try. And that is what you're focusing on is, oh, why did this go viral? Why did that hit? Why, okay, let's do that. And then inevitably that changes day to day, sometimes week to week, month to month. And we're in this constant cycle of chasing things to try to be the next hot thing and losing the balance that you just mentioned too, and the blood, sweat, and tears and the love, laughter, and you know, all of that just seems to have gone out the window. And man, I love having conversations like this. Like, how is that throughout all of this new world that we live in since you've been doing this forever? How do you stay driven, and how do you not just feel like what does this matter, you know, and succumb to it all?
Yeah. And it's, this, I would share this with everybody, suggest this for everybody is the gut instinct. You got to follow your gut, right?
Yeah.
And human performance is my kind of my purpose path, and there is science between the brain and the gut. For me, it's about IQ and EQ. So the intellectual quotient. So all the data you get in, and you can use that for the human or for the company. So all that hard data, the zeros and ones, the quantitative, right? Then you also need the qualitative, the emotional, the EQ, and those are all based on experiences. And so get out in the world and experience and talk with people and be with people and don't just, sit back and take notes and write down the zeros and ones, what are the, the surveys and all that type of thing. Like that's all IQ stuff. You got to ask the question, like, why did you answer that question on the survey as a yes or a no? So tell me more about that. And then you get to a deeper level of, start peeling back the onion, keep asking the question why, and you get to that root and you find out that it's not exactly what you thought it was. Right. And oh, by the way, you become more empathetic with somebody and the person that you're trying to, create for or influence and help. And so all of that together, that IQ and EQ to me is what blends together and becomes that gut instinct. And I just try to continue doing what I think is right. Both what was given to me in genetics and nurtured to me by my parents growing up and by people around me that I surround myself with. And that's also equally important. I have three kids, a son that's 26, a daughter that's 23, and another daughter that's 20. And I mean, their friend groups, that is everything. Like the people you surround yourself with. So
yep.
That's another one that I have a dear friend that grew up in Compton, and he did something as a junior, I think it was in eighth grade. He said, like, he put on this dance, like this after party thing that all the high school kids, like he basically planned it out and set this whole thing up and the known drug dealer in the whole area was so impressed with his salesmanship and what he did and how he gathered, and the party was amazing and the vibe that he created. He's like, yo kid, I got a job for you. Like, you just follow me and I'm going to teach you. Like, you will be, you're made. And he was also a football player, like a athlete. And he said that was one of the moments where he was like, do I go left or do I go right?
Mm-hmm.
And thank God he went right and didn't, didn't go the direction that probably a lot of other people would go. So it's like, surround yourself. And he's been incredibly successful. He's a retired multimillionaire, probably sitting by his pool right now. But you just gotta surround yourself with the right people and trust your gut instinct. And I do that in design. It's the same process. Everybody's a designer. You're a designer of yourself, right? It's the longest running project.
Wow.
I was gonna say, yeah. You don't want me to draw anything with a pencil. there's no straight lines, no curves, no circles. I'm glad you switched that and said a designer of yourself, because you were like, everybody's a designer. I'd have been like, Coop, like, I love you, bro, but a Jacques and a pencil and a draft board, ruler, all those things, they're all anti Jacques. I want to talk about the Nike stuff because I feel like people want to know that, but I also love this. Like this perspective stuff that you're sharing with us, because I feel like it's much more original and has much more depth to it, and people will get more from it. So let's, I guess, maybe try to combine the two.
I was just going to say, any question about a Nike project is going to have this stuff in it. That's what it's all about. It's not separate.
All right. Yeah. Let's try and find, maybe let's make this like an educational bit here. So like when you were assigned a brief, how do you read between the lines to make it what it should be?
Right when you asked that, I channeled my inner Tinker Hatfield, because we're good friends. And I was going to interrupt you and I'd say, he would have said I'd throw it away.
Yes. Yes.
But that's a little bit of the rub that I had at Nike. And the clients that I work with now, they're small enough where they're not set in their ways, and they're willing to learn and to be formed. It's all about product creation. I even tell this to kids, like if their visual communication is not up to this, to where it needs to be, you can either like keep working at that, or maybe you're just want to be a creator and there's other ways to go about doing it. One of my best friends, I mean, he's like a little brother to me, Chad Troyer, he's a, you know, senior product director in Brand Jordan. He wanted to be a footwear designer. I helped him into becoming an Eakin. I helped him become like, he's found his way into, and now he's designing, he's creating with some of the best athletes in the world, including MJ himself. And some of the best designers that's their job to draw, to visualize it for everybody. But Chad's working with them like, oh, what do you think about this? Or what if we did that? Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. Like, it's the creation team. So, I just totally got derailed. Put me back on the track. What was it?
No, it's just like with some of the stuff that you have worked on that people might recognize or do recognize if you're a big sneakerhead at Nike, like how did you land on some of those designs? What inspired some of those? You know, was it something that came from your room?
The brief is it's all part of it. So the product marketing is, let me back up. So for everyone listening, because I get this all the time. And this will help a lot of people, I think. I went to work every single day. And since it's always about cars, also or half about cars, I did risk getting a speeding ticket to work because that's how much I loved getting to Nike. And I did get speeding tickets all the way through the 25 years. I knew my role was to design, was to draw even. Let's just say draw, visualize. To visualize the footwear. It was our collective responsibility when I was in basketball to grow the culture of the sport, and among a collective responsibility to grow the culture of sport, to grow the culture of the game, basketball, to grow the culture of sport within, you know, the world. That's what we were all doing. And that was what I'm saying. Like, if you bumped into somebody, you knew what they were doing. Like, that's what we were all trying to do. I was, you know, for the first 10 years under that umbrella of basketball designing, you know, but there were marketing people that couldn't draw. They said that they couldn't draw, but I allowed them and I encouraged them to draw on top of my drawings if they couldn't get it out in words, or I'm like, here, grab some pens, like whatever. Like, I need to know what's in your head. You need to know what's in my head. We need to know what's in the athlete's head. We all need to be empathetic. That's how you get to greatness.
Yep.
And there should be creative tension between the two of you. And if you keep it healthy, and actually funny enough, I have a rubber band here, like this rubber band, I can keep doing this for a long time as long as it doesn't get dried out. Right. Like you have to, want to keep them, like you have to keep them oiled if you really want to keep it around for a long time. So if you're on a team, any kind of team, you gotta know how to keep that machine or, you know, that team oiled and running well. So the brief is just part of it. So if it's Tinker would throw it away because he wasn't a part of it. If you sat down with Tinker and was like with cross training, like he kind of had that vision, but then John Barber was, you know, he pulled in John Barber to the office. Hey, I was at the YMCA today. What do you think? I saw this. What do you think? Oh, that's interesting. Well, what if this, what if that? Okay, great. What if they're like, so they basically briefed the project. Yeah, it was somebody else's job to write it all down on a piece of paper, you know, so that it was documented. But it was all part of it. So as a designer, if you get the right education, you're taught how to go out in the world, find a population that you think could use some help with a product, or service or experience, whatever you're designing, and meet them, you know, find that empathy, design it, cobble it up, prototype it, find a manufacturer, know how to manufacture it, work with engineers to engineer it if you need engineering, and then how to market it, what you do. Like, we're taught from end to end to get it then back to the person you were trying to create for. At Nike or any other company, you know, to be efficient, they kind of split it up and your role is defined. I would say the worst thing you can do is create the swim lanes. I don't know if you guys in your line of work, it's like, oh, stay in your swim lane.
100%.
Yeah.
Who enjoys going to the swimming pool? I live across the street from one. Like, when the swim lanes are up, that's when I don't go in.
Yeah.
Like, unless I want to have a workout, then I'll go work. But it's no fun.
I think that really is the creative in all of us coming out there, because it's a lot like, you know, and I talked a bit with on Brett's episode about this, but like, you know, being an actor, like being on set, we're working with directors and we're working with writers, and the three groups of us are, you know, constantly involved in the mix, right? But then you've also got to consider, you know, the DP, and then you got to consider the lighting guys that the DP is communicating with, and the grips and how they're going to get this set up and everything. And there's 250 people involved in one product, you know, that you're trying to create here. And if everybody just stayed in their lane, nobody would get anything done. And so I think it goes back to what you just mentioned about encouraging marketers to draw on your sketches, not being so precious about something that you had created to the point where you're not open to listening to other people. Yeah. And I feel like maybe I'm wrong here, but I feel like that in and of itself is a big problem with a lot of things today, because so many people are, you know, rightly so, worried about losing their job or not, you know, if they don't contribute enough, are they worth enough? Is the company going to fire them? Or, you know, yeah. Or, hey, I need to take credit for this, or nobody's going to recognize what I'm contributing here. And I feel like, somewhere along the way, people have just lost their way and realize, if you could realize that jumping in a swimming pool with no boundaries is, to your point, a lot more fun than just staying in a lane and going back and forth. And I don't know, I just, that really resonates with me.
Yeah. I mean, there's times during the day where you need to put up the swim lanes, maybe. Or maybe sure. Somebody says, hey, I need to go for some laps. And you're like, cool, I'll help you put the swim lane up. Go do your thing.
Yeah.
And then when you're done, I'll help you take them down and let's party again. But yeah.
Yeah.
Nick, where do you... Let's tap into the... go ahead. No, I was gonna switch it up a little bit, but go ahead, Eric.
I was gonna probably tap into the car side of thing too, or try here. Is that where you were going with it? No,
yeah, I heard him mention the Firebird, and I was like, why exactly Firebird?
Yeah. So, you know, that is a valid question. You know, to Jacques' point, there is like the Firebird in and of itself for a car person like me, that you know, sends up some sort of bat signal, so to speak, right? Because it's not the 69 Camaro, which is amazing, but that's where everybody goes, right? The Firebird is the same platform, it's the same chassis, but there's things about it that made it so much more unique. And what was it that drew you to something like that?
So that's so funny that when you said the Camaro, that's where you go. So when I do go, when I have taken my car to car shows, the people that know about 69, well, Firebirds in general, but 69s and convertibles, mm-hmm. my car stops them in their tracks. Anyone else that's just there for the show and looking at cool cars, they walk right by it, straight to the Camaro or to the Chevelle or to the Mustang. And rightfully so, because there are less than 12,000 of my cars made. Not 120,000, 12,000.
Right.
So I think in 120, I mean, probably more than that with the 69 Camaro.
Oh, yeah.
So part of it was the unique, you know, the fact that it's, there's less of them. Mm-hmm. And my friend actually he's an automotive designer, Michael Desmond, he is one of my best friends, or probably my best friend at Art Center at the time. And he kind of turned me on to it. He's like, everybody can do the 69 Camaro. Let's go check out a Firebird. And I got it. Yep. It was a great price. And it was like the perfect car. So yeah, just unique. And, you know, less than 12,000. And I wanted something that, and it works. It's crazy. I drive around the city and some people stops in the traction and they're just the smile on their face because they haven't seen one since 1969.
Yeah.
You know, like it's wild. It's fun.
Now, you mentioned earlier too that that's kind of your happy place, and it brought something to mind. You know, speaking again the creative side, shouts out to another creative buddy of mine, a guy named Paul DiGiovanni. So, quick side note: Paul is a highly successful music producer, musician, writer, etc. You know, so much so that he left high school at like 17 to tour the world with the band called Boys Like Girls back in the day. And now he's found his way in Nashville and has created, you know, collaborator on a bunch of number one hits in the country world. And one of them was with an artist named Jordan Davis. And there's a song called Church in a Chevy. And lyrically, it talks about that being his form of church, right? Like he'll go for a drive and he'll go somewhere. And there wasn't a preacher, there wasn't a pew, but, you know, out here is that was his happy place, his church, et cetera. Especially since you mentioned you're a, you know, preacher's kid. Like, is that still to this day one of the places that you find where, you know, where your brain just fires and most of the inspiration comes from?
I don't know about that. I just find solace, you know?
Okay.
And by the way, like this, it's an original.
I see it.
Magazine. Yeah. Spread.
That's awesome.
If anybody knows ZZ Top's Cadzilla, that's a Cadzilla right there. Yeah, it's just a place of solace. But honestly, like I probably, cause it's all been redone. Like the whole thing's, people that have seen it and know about cars and know about that genre of car, they say it's probably for sure the top 10 nicest Firebirds in the world.
Wow.
Because there really aren't that many left and people have kind of either wrecked them or just messed them up and not done very good things to them. And this, my biggest mistake was putting it's about a 460 cubic inch Kaufman race engine in it.
How is that a mistake? I'm just going to interrupt you right there. How is that ever a mistake?
Because then you have to, that's like pulling on the thread of grandma's sweater, right? Like it just starts unraveling.
Fair enough.
So then you have to follow it around with everything else that matches up. Otherwise, that engine would snap that car in half.
Right. Chassis, everything, suspension, all that. Yeah.
Everything. Yeah. Hotchkiss suspension, subframe suspension, like the whole nine. But at the end of the day, it's not a bad thing. but driving it around is like a daily driver. It originally was a 350 and it was my college daily driver. I drove it from LA to Portland up to Seattle multiple times.
Really?
I was driving in during my internship at Nike.
So you've had that car for how long now?
93 maybe.
Wow.
But funny enough, the I shared this with someone on Instagram, but they didn't tell the story. But I will eventually tell it now. But the Bruin Max, you guys know the Bruin Max?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
The color that I originally drew it as was orange, and it just happens to be the color of my car. And there's a thing there. My house is the same way. I'm doing a new wedding ring that's going to have a similar. I like to design things where you're like, is that from the future or is it from the past? Like I can't put my thumb on the on the genre, right? And so I wanted my Firebird to look old, but then at the same time, like, wait a minute, that's new. I wanted it to sound new, but also old. Like there's moments where I can rev the engine and it's like, okay, there's the muscle. Or it can just hunt that just cruise by and you're like, ooh, that sounds really good. And then same with like how it drives and all that. And then the Bruin Max being kind of retro, but it's got the big bubble in it. It's PU instead of vulcanized. Like it's modern, but it's like modern with a twist. I call it future nostalgia. I've always wanted, like one of my dreams, I had a project that I was working on for Nike and I wanted to, and I still want to do it. Actually, Eric, you can pitch it to somebody in Hollywood. Just don't take my idea.
Hey, man, I'm all for it.
You guys,
I don't even know what it is yet, and I'm all in. Say that again.
You remember Friday Night Lights?
Of course.
Oh yeah.
That was the North Star for our show, Superman and Lois. Just the whole amazing, amazing show. Yeah.
Oh, very cool. So I have this vision of doing a documentary from the future. So do Friday Night Lights, but for the year 2040. And it's not going to be all Minority Report, because that's like way out there.
Sure.
And it's like, you know, are things going to change? Like right now, other than the fact that we're on this, but if you look around your office or the space you're in right now, what could not have existed even, let's just say, well, even 50 years ago. I mean, that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
My bet is there's very little other than your iPhone or your computer. But other than, like, Jacques, you probably have lighting that's LED. That's a big one that people miss. But other than that, it's like life kind of looks a lot like it did 50 years ago.
Sure.
Or at least when we're in high school. So what will our, and I use kids and generations, it's like, and I stay fit to be able to, I want to compete. I don't want to just play with my grandkids. I want to compete against my high school grandkids. Yeah. They're not even born yet.
Right.
Like, yes. What does that look like for their, in their, you know, future? And that's what I think. There I go again. I derailed myself. But also that's how I design, like that. Like, I want things to, you can't really put your, like the Foamposite. I didn't do the Foamposite. I did some Foamposites, but not the original. Like, you could put that, if that didn't exist, whatever, 25 years ago, and you put it in the marketplace today, people would be like, what the?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's how we did it. And people ask me all the time, like, what was so great about Nike basketball? Open swim. Right? We talked about swimming pool. Open swim. Empathetic to the culture. And I had long surfer hair, by the way. And I could send you a picture. Long surfer hair. I did not look like the culture, but I was empathetic with it. I played as much as I could. I learned as much as I could. I would go to the courts in LA, New York, Chicago, wherever I could go. And we just had fun and we created for the culture. And basketball athletes are freaking creative human beings. Like, they like to think out. Like, a lot of kids growing up, their safe place is the basketball hoop.
Sure.
Whether it's at the park, in their driveway, their friends play, like, that is their safe place. That's what's a shame about some of the parks today, if they're unsafe, like, because that goes against the grain of humanity, really. But kids need to play, need to have safe places to play, and basketball is one of those places. And so the creativity that comes out. So all you have to do is show up, be empathetic, and get to know them at their level. And man, the creativity and the ideas, and it's not like they're telling you, oh, hey, you should do a shoe that, you know, has no midsole and it's got shiny blue on the side and it looks like you dipped your foot into PU and call it the Foamposite. Wouldn't that be cool? Nobody did that.
Yeah.
But they helped us think outside of the life that we currently lived in, and we're super creative people.
It really is, you know. It really is just, again, listening. If you actually take the time to listen and be present with kids and watch their imagination just run wild, and not, you know, all too often, you know, and I'm guilty of it too. We all are as parents. Like, we've got our own day-to-day lives going on and whatnot. And every now and then we'll be dismissive or, oh, that's cool, buddy, and then go on doing what we're doing. And I catch myself sometimes and I have to check myself. Because if you take the time to really be present and listen to what's coming out of their minds, not only is it like really cool and inspiring, it reminds you of like, oh, this is what being a human being is. Where did this go? And, you know, like, my kid had a nightmare the other night about scaredactyls, he called them. They were scary pterodactyls, and that was what he called them. And on the surface, it's like, oh, that's cute. Well, instead of just being like, it's cool, buddy, they're not real, go back to bed. I laid in bed with him, and we had about a 20-minute conversation, and he and I came up with a children's book and a movie idea and everything based off of these scaredactyls, right? And it's like, if that's all it really takes, it seems so simple, is just communicate and listen and be present with other human beings. But, and I keep saying we lost our way somewhere, but man, it's just, there's a lot of beauty in that. And going back to what you said about just creating safe places for kids and then, you know, showing up there and just listening, you know, nobody's pitching you on anything. Nobody's like, hey, I had this great idea. It's just observing, listening to the sounds of, you know, the birds chirping in the background, the shoes squeaking on the court, the ball going through the net, the color in the sunset that night, like all of that stuff you can absorb. And that's where you create from. At least that's where I create from. And I feel like you're similar in that regard. And, you know, it's just a beautiful process if you allow it to be.
It's so funny you put a vision in my head, because I do one of my workouts is there's jungle gyms and schools around here, and I'll go run and do my workouts, and I'm on a jungle gym doing pull-ups or whatever, and adults are looking at me weird, and kids are kind of like looking at me like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm playing. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And I look at their parents. I'm like, so when did it go from playing to working out, something that you like to do to something that you feel like you have to do? Like, where is that transition? I can't put my thumb on it, but it's not awesome. It should never happen.
No.
Yeah. I feel like that's a thing that we also deal with the internet now. You know, like, we get a lot of comments on the sneaker history stuff when we post our little clips and videos and stuff of, like, you know, grown men talking about sneakers. And it's like, yeah, well, like, this has provided me a living for 20 years. Like, why would I not talk about this? I love this. It's connected me to my best friends in the world for the last 35 years. Like, why would I not still be talking about this? It's like, it doesn't really matter if it's sneakers or skateboarding or cars or whatever. It's like, how are we living in a world where we're not embracing that? We're not, like, going into these relationships to learn why people love these things versus this, like, offishness that exists, you know, through social media.
Yeah.
It's just a weird thing for me.
It's culture. It's that we're not very, the U.S. I was just having dinner and some people from France were there visiting, and we're just talking about how, like, the U.S. is so young, right? Like, they're asking how old the house that we were at, how old it was. And it was like 100 years old. And they're like, you know, that's like old for us,
right?
Especially on the West Coast. But for them, they're like, they kind of laugh. Like, that's nothing. Right. Yeah. And to me, it's like the culture. It's like culture is what drives communication, creates communities, and creates these things, these artifacts that, you know, Easter on Sunday, right? If somebody sees between now and Sunday, if somebody sees a painted egg, they're going to be like, oh, it's Easter. Well, that's an artifact of that culture. Mm-hmm. And that culture is pretty damn big, you know, religion. Yeah. And they have places to commune. Like, we have, you know, a sneaker con, like, that could be church for
church.
You
know, like, yeah.
It's all, you know, yeah. I say it's all about community conversation and culture. And then the artifacts that kind of generate all of that. And that's not just what footwear is. They're conversation pieces, watches, conversation pieces, you know, for some people, alcohol, wine, cigars, apparel, fashion, movies, what you name it. And there just isn't, it's just now starting like, you know, a couple hundred years old in our country, but in other countries, you can go, this is what, we didn't even get into, oh my God, it's over an hour. We didn't even get into tariffs in China and all that, which I would have loved to, because it does not, if you just sit down and think about it, they are craftspeople. The Chinese are craftspeople. They've been doing craft for not 100 years.
Centuries.
Thousands
of years. Yeah.
Of years. You can go to China right now. We could go right now and go buy something that has been crafted generations, thousands of years of generations. And that's in their genetic makeup. They're so talented.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the people that build footwear over there, that craft the footwear that we covet and we love and we exchange and buy and play in and all that, they're so talented at what they do. And it's not like you can just all of a sudden, you know, just hire a bunch of people and get them to do the same thing. It's not in our genetic makeup.
Right.
It just isn't. Like, I'm not, it's not right or wrong, good or bad, you know, tariffs or non-tariffs. It's just like,
yeah,
let the people, back to the full circle, let the people do what they do. Like, you know, and if over the years, if China ends up, you know, wanting to do something else and they want to get into, you know, they start doing more tech and less craft, great. The rest of the world will, you know, evolve along with them. But, and then you don't even get me started about replicating an entire industry in another country and the impact that would have on the planet. But, you know, when you're very selfish and self-centered about the country that you live in, then that, you know, that isn't awesome either.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
We're definitely, go ahead, Nick.
I just was going to say, to kind of bring this back to the sneakerhead world for our audience, I was going to ask, you know, you talk a lot about the freedom, you know, in the pool. When you look back at like your top, you know, in your mind, the three or four or five shoes that you designed over the years, when you look back at those, one, what are a few of those that like, you know, stand out in your mind? And do you look back at them and really see the freedom in the pool that you talk about with them?
Yeah, the ones that stand out to me are the ones that have stories. That's my other thing. It's the stories that matter. Yep. The ones that I've forgotten about, I mean, to be quite honest, the world probably didn't need them. You know, you probably could have done, Nike probably could have done the same business, just selling more of the shoes that had better story to them and better, you know, they were just better designs and let the other ones go. But as a business, you kind of have to, you know, try a few different things and see what hits. So yeah, I mean, it's all the ones that everybody talked. There's a few that have like these weird weird underground. I mean, the Jet Flight is one, but that's a cool story as well. Like, they're more obscure than others. There's one that I was going to do a story about, called the Alpha Flight. There's asymmetry, all mesh, monkey paw over molding. It was a super cool design, kind of ahead of its time. That had a cool, like kind of more of an internal story, more still like internal also to myself, but yeah, the ones that just have more conversation. It goes back to the community culture and conversation. It's the ones that if I put it on a table, people would just start talking about.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of shoes I've designed that you put on the table and people wouldn't say anything. They would just walk away. Yes. Nothing to talk about. Right.
Yeah. 100%.
It's the same with in the entertainment business, right? Like a good movie is talked about. Advertising, you know, campaign is talked about.
Yeah.
Wyden and Kennedy, you know, they would, I think it was Dan that said it, like, you know, there is no bad PR. Like if people are talking about it, then it's a good commercial. You know, if it's controversial or, you know, you just try to generate conversation.
And
others would say there has to be this love. Like when there's people that love it very strongly and people that hate it very strongly, like then you know you've done something right.
You have.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to have to do a part two of this for sure, man. Yeah, yeah. Jacques, you can wrap this up.
We need
this is so inspiring.
Yeah, we're going to have to do a part two. Maybe as soon as next week. I don't know what Coop's schedule is like. Maybe we get back on here and do another one. But before the last, I guess the final question, before we get out of here is what do you want your legacy to be? I have an idea in my head of what it is. But I'd be interested in hearing of like, what's the legacy of Coop?
Well, I mean, it's cliche,
design wise, not a family thing, design wise.
Okay. Yeah. Now you kind of threw me when you said you have an idea what it is. Now I'm trying to think of what your idea is. I just design like again. I don't want this. I hope this doesn't sound egotistical, but to continue what I've been doing with the great work that I've done, like you can get rid of all the bad stuff, but the stuff that I hear about years later, or in some cases decades later, that affected someone's life in a positive way. You know, that whether they ended up performing it in the intended purpose that it was created under, or not, doesn't matter to me. But I've had people around the world tell me stories about shoes that I've designed and how they changed their life. Like crazy stories. And I'm like, and they're saying it to me. I still now on Instagram, it's same. I get more of it. And I'm always like, I'm very thankful that I was able to do some, but it's the people behind it. Like I said, like all the people over in Asia that made it come to life. Like there's a big gap. I told Brett this too. And he's learned it and he's learning how to close the gap, but there's a big gap, Grand Canyon size gap between drawing a cool looking shoe that gets fire emoji on Instagram and actually putting something on the shelf that somebody wants to buy and perform it.
Wow. Yeah.
It's a lot. There's a lot there. And you can fill it yourself. You can fill it with other people. You can fill it like, so this, like the basketball EQLZ product, obviously, like that's world-class product built by a world-class team.
Yeah.
Right. Like they're giving me credit for the 247 and Brett credit for the 360. You know, neither one of them happens without us and many others that were on that team, including, you know, all of the vendors and the material manufacturers and everybody. My legacy, I'm just here to help. I just want to make people happy, honestly, and keep them on their pursuit. Okay. Like that is my goal is I'm here to help people pursue, inspire people and enable them to pursue their best self. And that's, with any product I can put on top of their body, any product I can put into their body, because I do nutrition as well. Anything I can do to help inform how they use their body, I do training, all of it. Product, services, experiences to help you pursue your best.
I love that.
Love that. Love that. All right. That's the real answer. I'll keep mine to myself. All right, y'all. thanks for watching the Cars and Kicks podcast. Our guest, Aaron Cooper. If you want to find out more about him, what's the Instagram handle, Coop?
AARON, so Aaron.ac.cooper. That's it. Sneaker Story Sundays.
Yeah, I was going to say, make sure you follow him before Sunday because that's when all the real stuff goes down. That's when you get the insight, the stories.
Hey, Firebird Friday just started, though, so I, you know.
It did.
Firebird Friday. Firebird Friday.
Just follow
him
right now. Just, and it is if you're Friday, listening to this, pull it up and follow us.
It is.
Yeah, we're recording this on Friday, so the Firebird Friday is popping.
I expect a little top-down drive, you know, on IG in the next hour or two.
Ooh, I'm looking at my calendar. Right, that's good.
Today I got time. Ladies and gentlemen, Aaron Cooper. Round of applause. We're gonna be back. We're definitely gonna have him back. We didn't even dig into like the sneakers, the legendary sneakers of the legendary athletes that he's worked with. We didn't even get to that part. Much more.
It's fine.
This is a really great conversation, and there's so much more to Coop that you guys need to know, and some inspiring stories and really some information on for those young designers in the world. This was your pre-brief. This was the prep that you needed to know that something big was coming, and that's going to be part two of this podcast, and we'll get that going when Coop has time for us again. He's a busy, busy man. The world wants him. I am Jacques Slade, but as you guys know, I don't host this show by myself just because I'm not cool enough to do that. That's why I have these two guys here, because they carry the weight of the show. You know, I mean, they could probably do this show without me, if we're being honest. So Eric, Nick, give him your name, all the information. Let's get out of here and give Coop his time back.
Yeah, truth be told, the only reason Jacques couldn't host this show is because half the time his mic's not working. But I'm Eric Valdez. So, thank you guys for tuning in today. And Nick, take us away, and we'll see y'all soon.
Nick Engvall here. Yeah, make sure you follow us, Cars and Kicks Show, Cars X Kicks Show on Instagram. Just go to carsxkicks.com. You can find us on all the platforms through that link. Thanks again to Coop for coming on, and I'm looking forward to the second part of this conversation. Catch you in the next one.
Y'all.
Thanks, everybody.
Pete.